2013, now that was the International Year of Quinoa. Its spelling has everyone calling it quinoa first up, and it seems to be your pass card to some sort of food elite if you've managed to learn its correct pronunciation. Quinoa is a fairly trendy, fairly expensive grain that's a new kid on the block of select supermarket shelves. There's nothing new about it though. From a plant indigenous to the Andes in South America, it's one of a suite of grains that get called, and rightly so, ancient grains. In the West, these like millet and spelt and barley and wild rice are all making their way into our diets again for perhaps the first time. Are ancient grains all they're cracked up to be, nutritionally speaking? Nutritionist Catherine Saxelby has become quite obsessed about the topic. She's written a book about it and she joined us as part of our Purely Practical series. And I began by asking her exactly what these grains are, what they have in common.
Well, they're grains that have been overlooked by modern farmers and agriculturalists, and they're just being discovered now. For example, farro or emmer was only a side crop in little pockets of Italy, Turkey, Iran, a lot of the Middle Eastern areas, and the farmers would keep the seed and just grow it as one or two paddocks when they had a bit of room or they weren't growing other crops. And now suddenly people are saying, hey, these are interesting. They've managed to miss the modern breeding programs that wheat has largely undergone. So they're pretty well, their genetic inheritance is largely untouched.
With what consequences? So just tell us that distinction, because this is actually
where they excel.
Nutritionally,
they actually excel in many ways. They're a lot higher in protein, which is important for the growing number of vegetarians and vegans. They're quite rich in fibre. Many of them, not all, are gluten-free, which again appeals to people who have an intolerance to wheat.
So which ones are gluten-free?
Millet, chia, buckwheat you've got in one of those jars.
What have I got? Yes, I've got oats, buckwheat,
oats
quinoa, red and white.
And wild rice. So all the rices
are
gluten-free.
That's a good sound. Sorry, I just have to do that.
All the rices are gluten-free. But for people with irritable bowel syndrome or digestive upsets, the ancient grains don't seem to annoy their digestive systems as much. They don't get the bloating, the pain, the distension, the diarrhea that they get with modern wheats. It's a very vague area.
What is it about modern wheat? What's happening with modern wheat that's different?
Somehow they're bred for probably maximum gluten, which is important for bread making, and they're bred for rapid growth and high yield. And a lot of the ancient grains are very low yielding. They only produce a small number of grains, and they're covered by a hard husk, which would have protected them in days gone by from attack by insects. So you could store them for 2 or 3 years, but it made them harder to mill and to turn into flour and the products that we like to eat in modern worlds, like bread and cereals and pasta.
So let's take something like quinoa, for example. And I am slightly sceptical because, one, it's expensive. It's kind of, you know, on all the posh shop shelves. It's fashionable. It's trendy. I've read a very powerful article in the Guardian newspaper about the impact of traditional societies who are growing these, exporting them, and now can't afford to grow their own grains and feed themselves.
All of that.
Very tragic. But quinoa, what is it? Because it's not technically a true grain.
It's a seed, but neither is buckwheat or wild rice. They're actually grasses. But because we farm them, we prepare them, we cook them and eat them as grains, they all get lumped together. So buckwheat for years and wild rice have been eaten like grains. So quinoa comes in several colours. There's the popular beige one, which actually now is making it into mainstream supermarkets, so it is becoming a mainstream product. But there's also black and grey and red, which you have in one of those jars.
I do, which looks like mustard seeds.
It does look like mustard seeds, but it cooks very quickly.
Just giving people the sound effect again. Sorry, folks.
Cooks in about 10 or 12 minutes, and it produces a light, separate grain that makes beautiful salads. I love quinoa in salads. You can toss it over roasted vegetables. You can toss it through baby spinach leaves, red onion, currants and almonds. Makes lovely light dishes. I recently came home from London.
It's a bit like couscous.
It is like couscous. It's a replacement for couscous.
Which sometimes I find a bit bland. Couscous is really dependent on the juicy tomato-based meal that you put with it.
And the onion and the black olives to give it a bit of oomph. Quinoa's the same. I was disappointed the first time I cooked the beige one. The red and black ones are quite crunchy. If you want a bit more oomph, go for them. But it's terribly popular now. And it's, again, it's high in protein. Nutritionally, its protein is quite exemplary. It's much better than any of the grains because it's not a grain technically, and it's high in fibre too.
What about spelt?
Spelt is an ancient form of wheat that's back in fashion, and I was at the markets on the weekend. There's spelt breads there. It makes very good bread.
What's the difference? Because, I mean, spelt's actually, this has got an 8,000-year history.
And it's an early forerunner of our modern wheats. There was spelt, emmer, einkorn, and they all were the ancient wheats from which we bred modern wheats by interbreeding them and crossing them and selecting them for rapid growth or resistance to attack or resistance to fungus.
So sort of industrial scale.
Yeah, that's right. And these obscure wheats were either taken over by modern wheat in the 1800s as milling became more and more predominant through Europe, or older crops like oats and barley, which were very predominant in Middle European countries, they fell by the wayside and were fed to animals. Mm. And barley we use for making malt, for beer and whiskey nowadays. So barley...
You've brought barley in, I think. Oh, no.
No,
but barley's on your list.
Pearl barley's back in fashion with slow-cooked lamb shanks and slow-cooked beef because it takes 30 or 40 minutes to cook. It's quite high in fibre, very nutritious, high in a soluble type of fibre.
But it's a bit of an effort for people, isn't
it? It is an effort.
When they could just put some rice in the rice cooker and off they go.
And nothing wrong with brown rice. It's very nutritious.
White rice is just vacuous.
White rice is
nutritionally vacuous.
Yeah. but the brown rice, or you've got wild rice, which has been around forever, you could use all of those.
Wild rice and it's like a tiny little packet.
And it's $8. Yes.
I just think, yep, you look good. I'm sticking with the brown rice.
And nutritionally, there's nothing wrong with brown rice. I tend to find that wild rice is too strong. So I cook it with some long grain brown rice and I mix the two and make a lovely salad with almonds, some green lentils, you know, the ones that stay separate, don't go mushy, and some dried fruit or sesame seeds. It's a lovely side salad. But you're right, it's a specialist product, special occasion, and, you know, it's only something different and it adds variety to
your diet.
Are there
any ancient grains that are actually quite cheap? Or are they all still quite boutique in a way?
Pearl barley and oats still cheap. Yeah. What else is there? Rye. Rye is cheap. Millet. Millet's pretty exotic, but millet in Australia and sorghum we grow mainly to feed animals. But in countries in India and Africa, that's their staple grain. And again, nutritionally very, very good for you.
Do we have any clues that with something like quinoa, how they might have been used differently in traditional societies? Are we using them in the same way?
With those grains like quinoa, we're tending to simply steam them or boil them and add them as side dishes or salads. I suspect they would have ground them into a flour. Mm. And you can also buy quinoa flakes at a health food shop, which makes a blandish sort of porridge in the morning if you wanted something else apart from your oats. So these recipes have been done for a modern cuisine, a modern kitchen. So they are more the salads, the sides, a lot of baking. But again, they're often mixtures of grains too. There'll be some ancient wheat with a little bit of millet and a little bit of oats thrown in to give texture and flavour.
I just wonder, I mean, you talk about these not undergoing the same sort of breeding and intervention as the contemporary version of grains, which have been modified to suit industrial processing and agriculture as well.
And the harvesting and the milling
make it
easier.
But might the same happen to some of these ancient grains, given the global demand now, given that they're trendy in the West?
Yeah. And chia is a good example. Australia is a major grower and exporter of chia in Western Australia. And that was a grain that came out of America and ended up being, you know, able to grow in the right latitude here in Australia. So I think you're right. I don't see why Australia couldn't grow, say, quinoa and take the pressure off Bolivia and Peru and Ecuador.
So they can actually feed and sustain their own existence.
Yeah.
Catherine Saxelby, thank you so much for joining us on this one. Catherine Saxelby there, nutritionist, talking about ancient grains. And this was part of our Purely Practical series last year. And you can catch up with the full archive
abc.net.au/rn. Look for Life Matters. Now that's it for today. You'll get to enjoy the lyrical tones of celebrated Irish singer Brian Kennedy next on the show. He grew up in Belfast during the Troubles. He has some very haunting memories of the violence and tensions he witnessed right there from his front doorstep. Looking forward to your company next on Life Matters. Natasha Mitchell saying bye for now. Stay with us. News coming your way.